Hello, this is Lex, and welcome to the Next Step Remote podcast, where I have the pleasure to interview some of the best remote work experts from all over the world. In each episode, we cover a topic, success story, or challenge to help you make remote work work. Enjoy. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. We are in the final quarter of 2020, and it's been a tough year for most organizations. Lost sales, furlough programs, pivoting business models, not to mention having to move to remote working pretty much overnight. However, where there is a crisis, there's often an opportunity for growth. And I've seen many examples of organizations which have expanded and need to hire more people. And that made me wonder about the experience of new hires and existing staff, especially if they were all office-based before the pandemic. How did the new hires learn the ways of working? How do they form relationships, communicate, and collaborate? How do you, as a leader, gel them together? And most of all, what about company culture and values? How do you make them fit in and adapt those? That's why today I've invited Will Beaton. Will is the head of people at MyTutor, an online tuition marketplace founded to offer life-changing tuition for all. They've doubled in size from 50 employees to just over 100 this year, all whilst transitioning to a remote-first way of working. Will, welcome. You've had a busy few months. Tell us a bit more about MyTutor and what you've been through.
Thanks for having me on. So, as you said, it's been a pretty exciting time for MyTutor, which I feel really lucky to be a part of. As you said, it's been a difficult time for a lot of companies, but for us, being an online marketplace before the pandemic hit, one of the biggest blockers to us was the adoption of online. People were unsure about having tuition online in the first place, but this sort of remote way of life has now taken over, and that's really helped us drive our business forward. So on our consumer platform, we've seen parents take a greater interest in their child's learning and an interest in online. So that's boomed that side of the business. And then also the government, I guess, has come under a bit more pressure as well on how they're going to support pupils that have missed their education through school closures. So we've been lucky enough to win a tender for a government contract as well. So that's meaning huge amounts of business for us on both sides, B2C and B2B, which has meant we've needed to expand our team, which is a lot of work for the what was a one-person people function initially. So as you said, we're just over 100 now. And that was from the start of the year, doubling in size. Luckily, the people team has doubled in size as well, with a look to increase that again further still as we go into next year with some hiring resource. But we're really excited about the challenges ahead that we look to face. And as you said, one of the things that we've been thinking a lot about is the culture and how half the office, you know, close to half the office have only ever worked online in a remote way, and how that's going to be different compared to the people who were there before, and what we need to do to kind of close that gap, I guess.
Yeah, it's a gap that is that I've noticed that a lot of organizations are facing, or at least asking questions, because majority of organizations were in a hiring freeze. Now they are looking into potentially starting to open up again and lifting those hiring freezes. Unlike you, you've had that situation throughout the lockdown that you needed to expand. So you were kind of one of the first, the pioneers to have to do that. And I think it's very interesting to try and get into a little bit more of how you've done it, how kind of what were the biggest challenges about it. But just to clarify one thing, do you only deliver your tuitions in the UK, or are you working across countries?
So all our tutors are undergrads studying in top UK universities. So they work predominantly to the GCSE and A-level specifications. We do a little bit of older stuff and some younger stuff, but that's the sort of the crux of what we do. So there are people who sort of work with us from overseas, but they'll probably be studying towards a UK-based kind of qualification.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And in terms of growth, when you say that you've grown from 50 to 100, I think it's important to draw that distinction, because if I remember right, that's the growth of the back office staff, the MyTutor staff that were working, not the tutor base. Is that correct?
Exactly. So the tutor base, They're all self-employed tutors. That's massive and has also grown. I think we're onto something like 12,000 now across the UK. And I think at the start of the year, that was something like 8,000. So we've seen massive growth there. But in terms of the 100, that sort of back office staff, so internal operations, sort of customer-facing operations, tech, product, marketing, data. So lots of different areas across the business that's grown, some more than others. So a large amount of growth has come in the operations function. We've built an entire new team. We've got a head to B2B ops, mid-level managers, and junior entry-level roles that's just been overnight created. So very exciting and interesting.
Okay, so let's get into that process. First of all, how was hiring remotely? Have you ever done it before at MyTutor, or was this the first time when people were brought into the company throughout the entire process being conducted remotely?
Yeah, so all of our interviewing prior to this had been done in person. I think there's a couple of times where our founder was on holiday and they wanted to do the final sort of founder's check, and they took a call from Barbados. I think I might have done one from Spain once because I was on holiday for a final round. But pretty much all the interview process has been done in person until now. So that was quite a big change.
And was it a lot of trial and error? How do you kind of assess what has happened, how we've done it? Are you happy with it? Did you have to tweak it much afterwards, or are you still tweaking it?
Yeah, so I think with everything, there's definitely still tweaking to be done. It actually, a lot of it stayed the same. So we had a good interview process in place. We had our set questions. We do kickoffs. We get the right people bought in at the right time. So actually, in that area, we didn't need to do a huge amount of change. One thing that was quite interesting was because we were going through such a scale hiring process, we had to do some assessment centers. So we were looking to bring in, I think, 13 junior members of the team in the space of 2 weeks. And we couldn't kind of run them all through the standard interview process because the kind of amount of time and the amount of people's effort that would go into that, you know, wouldn't work and we wouldn't be able to do it in such a time. So we did have to create from scratch kind of an online assessment center process that we could run these junior members of the team through and kind of make decisions on in the space of 3 or 4 days. Looked at what they've got to offer and make a decision whether to bring them in. So that was definitely an area that was new to us and we're definitely still iterating on. They were successful. We made the number of hires we wanted, but I think you can definitely keep looking at that and looking to try and improve it.
In terms of the improvements, I think you're right. If you've already had a well-established recruitment process, that is part of kind of what you need to have. And then transitioning to remote, it is slightly different, but at least the strong base is there, which is vital to the whole process. But I think tweaking the elements to actually be able to get the same type of interaction as you would face to face compared to online, it is slightly different. I think it's a bit slightly more difficult. How did you find that in terms of the actual interviewing processes and being able to get a feel for the candidate as you would in a face to face situation?
Yeah, it's super difficult. It's super difficult, and you know, when there's people who are good at interviewing, and they always have been, and they always will be. But suddenly you get a different group of people who are good at sort of video interviewing, because I think they can be quite different. You can have people who can now have notes upon their page, whereas before they might not be able to. So kind of almost like a different group of people can come forward as kind of potentially, you know, a candidate that could really shine. So it's definitely difficult. I guess what we try to do is we always try to get, you know, a minimum of 3 or 4 people through a process from different parts of the business and try and have a relatively standardized set of questions. A lot around sort of company values, you know, any functional skills for the role and competency. So hopefully it's like having a consistent process throughout with a consistent team and a consistent question back that hopefully you can just draw out from that individual what you want to see. But it's definitely difficult. I definitely saw some people struggle with the Zoom aspect of it that I think could have flown in an in-person one and potentially vice versa.
Okay, you mentioned screening or kind of trying to assess the values and the culture element of a candidate and how they would fit into the organization. Did you change that in any way? Let's get into that, because that's basically what I think what we really want to get into in today's episode, is that aspect of company culture and values. How do you, without, because a lot of these things, that there is an element of a gut feeling as well, which is very, very difficult to obviously do in an online environment. How do you screen for that? And then how do you think, are there any changes you're going to be introducing in that element of the process?
Yeah, I think in terms of if we're going to change any elements to that, we have decided recently, we're doing a lot of work in the long-term strategy of the people function and how that ties in to the sort of overall vision and mission of the company. And part of that is going to be like re-looking at our values and whether they're still fit for this sort of this remote world that we're working in. Do we need to change some of those values and behaviors that we'd set out, I think, probably about 2 years ago now? So I think a more longer term approach is something we're going to be addressing. But for us, in this process, we did keep it the same. So, you know, for us, the core values that we've hired against, receptiveness to feedback, proactiveness, just a couple that we run. They're still things we're looking for in all our candidates, and those questions can still kind of ring true, and we can still kind of press for those in the interview. So for us, that actually hasn't been a dramatic change through our process.
Oh, that's really good. Okay, so you've gone through the recruitment process, you've got the candidates, the people that you wanted, day one, they start. How has that been for you in terms of onboarding people remotely? Because I've had guests on the podcast before who specialize in recruitment and onboarding processes, very much helping organizations. But I always like to get the impressions and the experiences literally from the front line, especially when somebody's moved from a non-remote to fully remote. How was that process? And how did that kind of, did that already feed into trying to gel the teams, the existing team and the new hires together?
Yeah. So I think we kind of went through a few stages of what this looked like. And what's great is we've collected feedback throughout this whole process. We collect feedback from managers and we collect feedback from the individuals kind of 2 weeks in, 4 weeks in, three months in. So we are, that's something we love to look out for. So we have been able to tweak these processes. And when we first started, and we were kind of still in this lower levels of hiring, so there'd only be one or two people a week and you could have a dedicated hiring manager, we got some really great feedback. And, you know, some people were saying it's better than in-person onboarding. And I think a lot of that came from basically the manager's time. So although it worked really well, the time sink, when we got the feedback from the managers, it was completely all-consuming almost for that two-week period to kind of be there and be available for that individual to make sure that they were getting through. So as we kind of ramped up the scale, particularly as I talked about those associates, we had to make a few changes and try and take a little bit of pressure off those hiring managers just because it kind of wasn't scalable in that way. And then unfortunately, when we made those changes, the feedback was that they weren't getting quite enough support through that process and they didn't quite feel connected in the same way. So it's definitely a tough balancing act. I guess we're looking that we've got another round of sort of 10 associates coming in. So we'll try and take out some of the elements that we've picked up on and try and improve that. But I think, yeah, where you've got small numbers of hiring, time just seems to be something that people really value through an onboarding process, having somewhere to go for questions, having the time to run through something. But as you scale, time is obviously quite precious. And when you've got 10 people all vying for that time, it becomes more difficult. So that's something that we're trying to balance at the moment.
Yes, it is. Obviously, the scaling is always the biggest challenge. We try and think about processes that we put in place, having in mind that we might scale them one day, but when it actually comes to it's slightly a different kettle of fish. But that's kind of just nature of the beast, I guess. And it is that process of iteration. I think if one there's 2020 has shown us a lot of things, but if there's one thing to take away from it, it's probably the fact that you're never fully in control of what's going on, and you do have to be able to think on the spot, pivot, and adjust in whatever way, shape, or form is required. And processes like having to move everything remote overnight is a very good example. And I think getting it right, even organizations who have been remote first from day one, they still obviously tweak their processes and how they work, how they operate, how they do things. And I think it's an ongoing thing. And we have to take into consideration, obviously, the types of people that we hire, that we bring into organizations. And I think assessing that cultural fit is more difficult, obviously, in remote, and then managing the onboarding process and throughout the organization as they continue to work. So how have things been for you in terms of actually that gelling of the teams? Is there a gap that you've identified? Is it just a bit of a pain that you have to go through, and you think that will transition out throughout time, or how's that developed for you?
Yeah, there definitely is a gap between the two kind of cohorts, those who have experience of working in the office and then going remote, and those who've only worked remote. It's definitely a gap. And I think a big driver is sort of the people who were working at my tutor before, they kind of, the things that go unsaid, they're sort of aware of, you know, and I guess that's a big part that is culture. And I think people say, you know, this culture is kind of like, this is how things work around here. A lot of the stuff that's implied, they're aware of, and they know kind of where they can push and pull, and even, you know, how they can utilize policies in the best way, and the flexibility in the way that we work, that we, you know, we can't talk about it every week, but they're sort of ingrained in their head. But the new cohort are kind of less aware. They don't know where to kind of what they can push and pull, and there's a sort of a nervousness there to sort of take advantage of some of the stuff. You know, when we often look at attendance to a lot of, I think we have meditation classes, coaching sessions, yoga. If you break down the analysis, there's a lot of the more experienced team members that have been there before that know they can attend these sessions, and they know there's that flexibility, and you know, they can do another hour of work later, or if they've finished all their targets for the week, then that's fine that you did one less hour, because that's the way we work. And it's trying to get the new team members to understand those things, and how you can do that without just telling them every 2 minutes exactly what to do. Because I guess that is a big problem with remote working, is like communications fatigue. You know, we've had to manage what we're telling people when really, really carefully, because even, you know, as much as at the start of lockdown, we used to probably get, you know, 50 emoji reactions to every post, you know, thumbs up. And it's sort of, that's definitely gone down, because it's sort of just par for the course now, these notifications and announcements that come out. So you have to be really careful with the communications you're doing. So you can't say everything. So it's what do you say and when that's become really important.
Have you experienced what some hybrid organizations, before everything started happening early in the year? So that when a company was partly office-based, partly remote, there was often the problem of us versus them mentality, that the people working remotely felt left out from the interactions, the water cooler moments, everything that you've potentially just mentioned now as well, that you've experienced at my tutor with the existing staff. Do you think there's an element of that between your existing people who used to be in the office and the new hires?
Yeah, it's an interesting one to bring up. And before we went remote, we actually did have some part-time members of staff that were fully remote as well. Much smaller cohort, maybe there were 7 people of the sort of 50, and they often complained about meetings being inaccessible. It was harder to access information because they weren't kind of always in at the right times. But now we've moved to this fully remote working, it means that all sessions are delivered via Zoom. Everything's recorded, everything's easy accessible. The notes after meetings are sort of spot on and timely, and everything's geared towards working them. So that it's brought them much further, closer into the fold, and they now feel much more involved with my tutoring and part of that culture. So that's been one great thing. But then, yes, looking at the new side, the sort of us versus them mentality, I'd hope I'd I'd hope it's not so much that, but I think that the people who have been here longer, you know, it's hard to think about what the experience is like for those new people. They've got their friends. We had a solution available where people could drop into working spaces. They already know the three people that they want to message and have a day working with. They know who they can go, you know, out for dinner or lunch or a drink after work with. And it's hard to kind of make that additional effort to sort of include people that you didn't know before because, you know, that you haven't formed those bonds with yet. So I'd say it's more kind of less versus, more like haven't thought about them from the experienced hires. For the new joiners, you know, I'd hope it's not a versus approach, but you know, you could see how they'd maybe feel slightly different or maybe unable to take advantage of this stuff in the same way, and then could feel sort of, you know, a bit put out by that. But hopefully it's not too bad and something that we can work away from if it is there.
I'm sure it's not. It's just brought on that comparison, yeah, of what's hiding in that space. And I don't think it's versus, because I think in the hybrid situation that is a lot more kind of visible, that difference, that you've got remote people and you've got office people. Whilst now it's everybody's remote. It's just I haven't had the opportunity to meet them because everybody's working from their home office or their living room or wherever they might be. And I think there's a lot more appreciation. So it is that element of just transitioning and starting a new job for anyone in normal circumstances is a daunting, anxiety prone experience. And now we have to kind of do that, and you don't get the benefit of actually interacting with people. Yes, we have all types of breakout rooms and special sessions where we kind of just chit chat, but it's not the same as building that human connection face to face. And we are probably a lot more task oriented in our work today. Those that I've got a meeting at 11, I've got a meeting at 12, and the majority of the time is just to do something, do some work, whilst you don't probably have that same type of interaction and that connection that you would normally be having with your colleagues. I'd like to get into that gap a little bit more that you've mentioned. What do you think is hiding there in terms of what are the kind of core challenges in that space, in terms of that's causing that gap in the first place? Because we talked about things like communication and collaboration and trust and things like that, because those all are the things important to people gelling together. What have you experienced as kind of the biggest flags? I don't want to say red flags, but the biggest flags that came up for you in that space?
Yeah, so I guess the reason we've been able to identify this is through sort of constant feedback. So we feedback regularly on every 4 weeks, kind of a pulse survey, and quarterly through the sort of ENPS survey. And then generally, you know, managers are touching in and feeding back in manager meetings. And I guess that's kind of where we've sort of identified these, as well as I've sort of spoke a little bit about taking advantage of what we've got available as a business and the kind of divide between the new joiners and the more experienced people about attendance on that. So I guess that kind of implies there that it's almost, I guess they don't know how trusted they are in a way, because they don't feel comfortable to kind of utilize flexible working or use the kind of sessions and tools we've got available. So I think that's something that's come out. And then when we kind of speak to our managers, they've spoke a little bit about how it's more difficult to pick up on potentially like bad habits, that, you know, for people who've been there before, they know what to watch for. They're used to working together. But with these new joiners, particularly with all of them having their first time jobs, how do you kind of check for that stuff? When you say often it's just sort of, you might deliver a task, but you're not sure how they got there and you're unsure of the working out almost because you haven't been there to kind of see that journey. There are things that have come up. But I mean, it's definitely a really difficult one and something that I think we're only really just exploring. You know, we've been hiring so much and, you know, we kind of blinked and there's now 100 people in the company and we haven't got that much time because there's 30 more kind of coming in the door. So it's something that we're keeping exploring, and I think we're still in the stage of really collecting feedback on the whole process and trying to really identify what that gap is. Like you said, what does it actually mean? What are the differences and how do we kind of counteract that? Because I think we're still very much in the learning stage.
Because there are different elements potentially hiding in that, I think. And they can be from as logistically focused as kind of how do we conduct meetings. You know, they start and they end on time and we leave gaps between meetings. But they can be far kind of more on the intangible emotional side. Things like what's the purpose of the organization or what's the purpose of the team? What are the core values? Or how, most of all, do we create psychological safety? Because psychological safety is a very difficult topic on its own. And a lot of companies struggled with that before the pandemic and being able to create that in an office. Now being able to convey that and have that psychological safety in an online environment, especially if you don't have that connection with people, how do you identify that? What do you do with that? Those are things, the very important questions that are very difficult to tackle and very difficult to address. And I think I've been seeing that with a lot of organizations that I've been working with, that's kind of one of the key areas, is like, how do we create that space where people can openly share what's going on with them, that they might be struggling, especially on a kind of mental health element side of things, because majority of countries are heading into or already in second phase lockdowns, might be more, we don't know. Mental health is yet again, it's going to take a massive hit. It's going to be difficult for people. How do you open up? It would have been easier to open up to your colleagues, your friends, people who you know already. But if you're new, how do you kind of say that to your manager? And especially where job security might also be at stake. And it's that creating that space, I think that is also very, very important. Mm-hmm. Out of the exploration, all the feedback that you've been doing, if you can share, what is kind of one of the top things that you want to look into a little bit more in the next weeks and months to come with the new cohorts coming in?
Yeah, so I think we've done some really good work. You know, you spoke a lot there about mental health, and that's something we've done well with. And we've done sort of top down. We've done some really good grassroots stuff. So luckily, it's a topic that a lot of people in the company are interested in, and we've been able to kind of get more junior people involved at that level. We have lots of mental health first aiders who support across the company. You spoke about making it a topic that's easy to talk about. Again, when you see the senior leadership team talking about it, that does feed down well. And we've got tools available, check-in surveys about anxiety, stress, well-being, that's available that can help people frame the conversation. So that's a place we've done quite well in. But something that I think we've maybe missed is this, for us, which is quite a new level in the company, is the mid-level managers. So with this sort of massive expansion, we had our SLT before, we had our heads of department, relatively experienced, maybe like myself, been in the company 4 or so years, or the people we are bringing in maybe have, you know, 5 to 10 years experience. But what we've had is these new mid-level managers emerging who maybe haven't managed before, suddenly have to take responsibility of between like 1 and 4 reports that they're focusing on, not really had any sort of training. And like you said, they're going through this process as well, this difficult time. They've got their own mental health to deal with, but suddenly they've got a couple more reports that they need to focus on, who they're having to do so remotely. And these people are new into the world of work potentially, or new into the remote work. So our big focus for this next, well, we're probably more sort of Q1 next year to sort of, or prepare them for the cohort that's coming in then, is around supporting the mid-level managers. And I think that's kind of going to be twofold. One, with the sort of more pastoral stuff. So how they can draw out in a remote world these more difficult conversations and actually properly check in with someone to make sure they are doing okay and they are kind of utilizing the resource available, looking after themselves. But also how to effectively manage someone in a remote world, like how to hold someone to account, how to effectively manage someone to specific KPIs, make sure they're delivering against targets, setting those targets sort of in the medium long term, and finally kind of also longer term development. So making sure that personal development doesn't just fall to the wayside. Like you said, it's easy just to go calendar invite, task to task, but making sure they keep a longer term mindset, because it can be a bit of a lonely place sometimes being kind of a mid-level manager. You feel like a little bit too far away from the top, and suddenly you're not you know, you're not on the ground level anymore where a lot of the support does go, and you've got to defend both sides. So that's an area I really want to focus on.
I think that's really good, because I've seen so many, and I've been through that process myself, is when you get promoted through different stages of an organization, you go from relative junior level, you really get good at what you're doing, and you get promoted the level up, and all of a sudden you're being given somebody to manage who's doing your job that you used to do. Mm-hmm. But you actually haven't been given any training on being a manager, or most of all being a leader to that person and looking after that person. You do have responsibility not just for their results, but the responsibility for their well-being in a work environment, in an emotional state, in a psychological state as well. And I think there's definitely a lack of that, though. It's not organizations don't promote that. We just kind of put people into, like, promote them into a manager. Of course, they already know what to do in that job. I'm sure they can do something else, but there's a massive element that is missing. We've gone through a lot of things today, kind of bounced around of what your challenges have been, what you've learned, what you're going to do next. If you were to kind of just summarize it for people listening, who an organization might be going through similar things, what would be the kind of the couple of takeaways that you'd like to leave people with?
Sure. So I think for us, the best thing we did was think really hard about what feedback we wanted to collect at what times. So whether that's onboarding, you kind of got your pre-onboarding, 2-week check-in, 4-week check-in, 3 months, and who you want to get that feedback from. So again, with onboarding, it's the manager that's running the process as well as the person going through it, and just sort of collecting that in, constantly looking at it and looking at how you can iterate, because you're going to make mistakes. We make mistakes, and there's always going to be a better way to do stuff, either as you scale or as you adapt more to remote. I think the second thing has been communicating. So really managing the communications, sort of shorter term, longer term, thinking about really specific messaging that you want to get across at what time, remembering that things aren't just implicit anymore, that aren't picked up around the office. You really have to be deliberate in what you're telling people. You know, you can't just throw something out there and expect it to stick. Like, it's an initiative. You've got to really got to drive that. They're two things that I think have been really important for us as we've adapted to online and as we've scaled. And then just that last point as well, I think, remembering all layers of the business, the mid-level managers is something that's come out for us, but take a look at your business, think about those different areas, and make sure that each area is getting its own focus, because they'll probably need different touches depending what that group is, but make sure everyone's getting a bit of focus.
Amazing. Will, thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. All the best for the future, and for the obviously with the new hires, new cohorts, and I'm sure you'll continue to grow. So all the best of luck for that. One more thing before you take off. If you enjoyed listening to the show and found it of value, I'd really appreciate if you shared it with your network and considered leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you might be listening to it. Also, if you've got any questions, any suggestions of topics to cover, guests to invite, please drop me an email on nextsteppodcast@human.pm. If you want to find out a bit more about Next Step Group, please visit www.nextstep.group. This podcast is produced and hosted by Lech Guzowski from Human PM. Special thanks to the founders of the Next Step Group, Christina Barger, Jelaine Chan, Stefan Dorn, and Matteo Grassi.